The Dream Quest of Unknown Kadath by H.P. Lovecraft. Part 9. Carter's first act was to close and barricade the archway in the cliff with fallen blocks and odd debris that lay around. He wished no follower from Lang's hateful monastery, for along the way ahead would lurk enough of other dangers. Of how to get from Sarkamand to the peopled parts of Dreamland, he knew nothing at all. Nor could he gain much by descending to the grottos of the ghouls, since he knew they were no better informed than he. The three ghouls that had helped him through the city of Gugs to the outer world had not known how to reach Sarkamand in their journey back, but had planned to ask old traders in Dylathleen. He did not like to think of going again to the subterranean world of Gugs, and risking once more that hellish tower of Koth with its cyclopean steps leading to the enchanted wood. Yet he felt he might have to try this course if all else failed. Over Leng's plateau, past the lone monastery, he dared not go unaided, for the high priest's emissaries must be many, while at the journey's end there would no doubt be the Shantax, and perhaps other things to deal with. If he could get a boat, he might sail back to Inquanok, past the jagged and hideous rock in the sea, for the primal frescoes in the monastery labyrinth had shown that this frightful place lies not far from Sarkamand's basalt keys. But to find a boat in this eon-deserted city was no probable thing, and it did not appear likely that he could ever make one. Such were the thoughts of Randolph Carter when a new impression began beating upon his mind. All this while, there had stretched before him the great corpse-like width of fabled Sarkamand, with its black broken pillars and crumbling sphinx-crowned gates, and titan stones and monstrous winged lions, against the sickly glow of those luminous night clouds. Now he saw far ahead and on the right a glow that no clouds could account for, and knew he was not alone in the silence of that dead city. The glow rose and fell fitfully, flickering with a greenish tinge which did not reassure the watcher. And when he crept closer, down the littered street and through some narrow gaps between tumbled walls, he perceived that it was a campfire near the wharves, with many vague forms clustered darkly around it, and a lethal odor hanging heavily over all. Beyond was the oily lapping of the harbor water, with a great ship riding at anchor. And Carter paused in stark terror when he saw that the ship was indeed one of the dreaded black galleys from the moon. Then, just as he was about to creep back from that detestable flame, he saw a stirring among the vague dark forms, and heard a peculiar and unmistakable sound. It was the frightened meeping of a ghoul, and in a moment it had swelled to a veritable chorus of anguish. Secure as he was in the shadow of monstrous ruins, Carter allowed his curiosity to conquer his fear, and crept forward again instead of retreating. Once, in crossing an open street, he wriggled worm-like on his stomach, and in another place he had to rise to his feet to avoid making a noise among heaps of fallen marble. But always he succeeded in avoiding discovery, so that in a short time he had found a spot behind a titan pillar where he could watch the whole green-lit scene of action. There, around a hideous fire, fed by the obnoxious stems of lunar fungi, there squatted a stinking circle of the toad-like moon-beasts and their almost human slaves. Some of these slaves were heating curious iron spears in the leaping flames, and at intervals applying their white-hot points to three tightly trussed prisoners that lay writhing before the leaders of the party. From the motions of their tentacles, Carter could see that the blunt-snouted moon beasts were enjoying the spectacle hugely. And vast was his horror when he suddenly recognized the frantic meeping, and knew that the tortured ghouls were none other than the faithful trio which had guided him safely from the abyss, and had thereafter set out from the enchanted wood to find Sarkomand and the gate to their native deeps. The number of malodorous moon-beasts about that greenish fire was very great, and Carter saw that he could do nothing now to save his former allies. Of how the ghouls had been captured he could not guess, but fancied that the grey toad-like blasphemies had heard them inquire in Dailathleen concerning the way to Sarkomand, and had not wished them to approach so closely the hateful plateau of Leng, and the high priest not to be described. For a moment he pondered on what he ought to do, and recalled how near he was to the gate of the ghoul's black kingdom. Clearly it was wisest to creep east to the Plaza of Twin Lions, and descend at once to the gulf, where assuredly he would meet no horrors worse than those above, and where he might soon find ghouls eager to rescue their brethren, and perhaps to wipe out the moon-beasts from the Black Galley. It occurred to him that the portal, like other gates to the abyss, might be guarded by flocks of night-gaunts, but he did not fear these faceless creatures now. He had learned that they are bound by solemn treaties with the ghouls, and the ghoul, which was Pikmin, had taught him how to glibber a password they understood. So Carter began another silent crawl through the ruins, edging slowly toward the great central plaza and the winged lions. It was ticklish work, but the moon-beasts were pleasantly busy, and did not hear the slight noises which he twice made, by accident, among the scattered stones. At last he reached the open space, and picked his way among the stunted trees and vines that had grown up therein. The gigantic lions loomed terrible above him in the sickly glow of the phosphorescent night-clouds. But he manfully persisted toward them, and presently crept round to their faces, knowing it was on that side he would find the mighty darkness which they guard. 10 feet apart crouched the mocking-faced beasts of diorite, brooding on cyclopean pedestals whose sides were chiseled in fearsome bas-reliefs. Betwixt them was a tiled court with a central space which had once been railed with balusters of onyx. Midway in this space a black well opened, and Carter soon saw that he had indeed reached the yawning gulf whose crusted and mouldy stone steps lead down to the crypts of nightmare. Terrible is the memory of that dark descent, in which hours wore themselves away, whilst Carter wound sightlessly round and round down a fathomless spiral of steep and slippery stairs. So worn and narrow were the steps, and so greasy with the ooze of inner earth, that the climber never quite knew when to expect a breathless fall and hurtling down to the ultimate pits. And he was likewise uncertain just when or how the guardian night-gaunts would suddenly pounce upon him, if indeed there were any stationed in this primeval passage. All about him was a stifling odor of nether gulfs, and he felt that the air of these choking depths was not made for mankind. In time he became very numb and somnolent, moving more from automatic impulse than from reasoned will. Nor did he realize any change when he stopped moving altogether, as something quietly seized him from behind. He was flying very rapidly through the air before a malevolent tickling told him that the rubbery night-gaunts had performed their duty. Awaked to the fact that he was in the cold, damp clutch of the faceless flutterers, Carter remembered the password of the ghouls and glibbered it as loudly as he could amidst the wind and chaos of flight. Mindless though night-gaunts are said to be, the effect was instantaneous, for all tickling stopped at once, and the creatures hastened to shift their captive to a more comfortable position. Thus encouraged, Carter ventured some explanations, telling of the seizure and torture of three ghouls by the moon beasts, and of the need of assembling a party to rescue them. The night gaunts, though inarticulate, seemed to understand what was said, and showed greater haste and purpose in their flight. Suddenly the dense blackness gave place to the gray twilight of inner earth, and there opened up ahead one of those flat, sterile plains on which ghouls love to squat and gnaw. Scattered tombstones and osseous fragments told of the denizens of that place, and as Carter gave a loud meep of urgent summons, a score of burrows emptied forth their leathery, dog-like tenants. The night gaunts now flew low and set their passenger upon his feet, afterward withdrawing a little and forming a hunched semicircle on the ground while the ghouls greeted the newcomer. Carter glibbered his message rapidly and explicitly to the grotesque company, and four of them at once departed through different burrows to spread the news to others and gather such troops as might be available for a rescue. After a long wait, a ghoul of some importance appeared and made significant signs to the night gaunts, causing two of the latter to fly off into the dark. Thereafter there were constant accessions to the hunched flock of night gaunts on the plain, till at length the slimy soil was fairly black with them. Meanwhile fresh ghouls crawled out of the burrows one by one, all glibbering excitedly, and forming in crude battle array, not far from the huddled night gaunts. In time there appeared that proud and influential ghoul which was once the artist Richard Pickman of Boston, and to him Carter glibbered a very full account of what had occurred. The erstwhile Pickman, pleased to greet his ancient friend again, seemed very much impressed, and held a conference with other chiefs a little apart from the growing throng. Finally, after scanning the ranks with care, the assembled chiefs all meeped in unison and began glibbering orders to the crowds of ghouls and night gaunts. A large detachment of the horned flyers vanished at once, while the rest grouped themselves two by two on their knees with extended forelegs, awaiting the approach of the ghouls one by one. As each ghoul reached the pair of night gaunts to which he was assigned, he was taken up and borne away into the darkness, till at last the whole throng had vanished save for Carter, Pickman, and the other chiefs, and a few pairs of night gaunts. Pickman explained that night gaunts are the advance guard and battle steeds of the ghouls, and that the army was issuing forth to Sarkamand to deal with the moon beasts. Then Carter and the ghoulish chiefs approached the waiting bearers and were taken up by the damp, slippery paws. Another moment, and all were whirling in wind and darkness, endlessly up, up, up to the gate of the winged lions and the spectral ruins of primal Sarkamand. When, after a great interval, Carter saw again the sickly light of Sarkamand's nocturnal sky, it was to behold this great central plaza swarming with militant ghouls and night gaunts. Day, he felt sure, must be almost due, but so strong was the army that no surprise of the enemy would be needed. The greenish flare near the wharves still glimmered faintly, though the absence of ghoulish meeping showed that the torture of the prisoners was over for the nonce. Softly glibbering directions to their steeds and to the flock of riderless night gaunts ahead, the ghouls presently rose in wide whirring columns and swept on over the bleak ruins toward the evil flame. Carter was now beside Pickman in the front rank of ghouls, and saw as they approached the noisome camp that the moon beasts were totally unprepared. The three prisoners lay bound and inert beside the fire, while their toad-like captors slumped drowsily about in no certain order. The almost human slaves were asleep. Even the sentinels, shirking a duty which in this realm must have seemed to them merely perfunctory. The final swoop of the night gaunts and mounted ghouls was very sudden. Each of the grayish toad-like blasphemies and their almost human slaves being seized by a group of night gaunts before a sound was made. The moon beasts, of course, were voiceless, and even the slaves had little chance to scream before rubbery paws choked them into silence. Horrible were the writhings of those great jellyfish abnormalities, as the sardonic night-gaunts clutched them, but nothing availed against the strength of those black prehensile talons. When a moon-beast writhed too violently, a night-gaunt would seize and pull its quivering pink tentacles, which seemed to hurt so much that the victim would cease its struggles. Carter expected to see much slaughter, but found that the ghouls were far subtler in their plans. They glibbered certain simple orders to the night gaunts which held the captives, trusting the rest to instinct. And soon the hapless creatures were borne silently away into the great abyss, to be distributed impartially amongst the dolls, gugs, ghasts, and other dwellers in darkness, whose modes of nourishment are not painless to their chosen victims. Meanwhile, the three bound ghouls had been released and consoled by their conquering kinsfolk, whilst various parties searched the neighborhood for possible remaining moon-beasts, and boarded the evil-smelling black galley at the wharf to make sure that nothing had escaped the general defeat. Surely enough, the capture had been thorough, for not a sign of further life could the victors detect. Carter, anxious to preserve a means of access to the rest of Dreamland, urged them not to sink the anchored galley. And this request was freely granted, out of gratitude for his act in reporting the plight of the captured trio. On the ship were found some very curious objects and decorations, some of which Carter cast at once into the sea. Ghouls and night gaunts now formed themselves in separate groups, the former questioning their rescued fellows anent past happenings. It appeared that the three had followed Carter's directions and proceeded from the Enchanted Wood to Dylathleen, by way of Nir and the Skin. Stealing human clothes at a lonely farmhouse, and loping as closely as possible in the fashion of a man's walk. In Dylathleen's taverns, their grotesque ways and faces had aroused much comment, but they had persisted in asking the way to Sarkamand, until at last an old traveller was able to tell them. Then they knew that only a ship for Lelag Leng would serve their purpose, and prepared to wait patiently for such a vessel. But evil spies had doubtless reported much, for shortly a black galley put into port, and the wide-mouthed ruby merchants invited the ghouls to drink with them in a tavern. Wine was produced from one of those sinister bottles grotesquely carven from a single ruby. And after that, the ghouls found themselves prisoners on the black galley, as Carter had found himself. This time, however, the unseen rowers steered not for the moon, but for antique Sarkomand, bent evidently on taking their captives before the high priest not to be described. They had touched at the jagged rock in the northern sea, which in Quanox mariners shun, and the ghouls had there seen for the first time the real masters of the ship. Being sickened, despite their own callousness, by such extremes of malign shapelessness and fearsome odor. There, too, were witnessed the nameless pastimes of the toad-like resident garrison, such pastimes as give rise to the night howlings which men fear. After that, had come the landing at Ruined Sarkomand, and the beginning of the torture, whose continuance the present rescue had prevented. Future plans were next discussed. The three rescued ghouls suggesting a raid on the Jagged Rock, and the extermination of the toad-like garrison there. To this, however, the Night Gaunts objected, since the prospect of flying over water did not please them. Most of the ghouls favored the design, but were at a loss how to follow it without the help of the winged Night Gaunts. Thereupon Carter, seeing that they could not navigate the anchored galley, offered to teach them the use of the great banks of oars, to which proposal they eagerly assented. End of part 9.